This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
Strange Arrivals is a production of iHeartRadio and Grim and Mild from Aaron Mankey. For the best experience, listen with headphones.
I would like to tell you a little bit about tonight's speaker, Mr. John Keel. Mr. Keel writes for approximately 150 newspapers in this country and all over the world, which deal exclusively with the problem of UFOs. For the North American Newspaper Alliance, that's NASA. He's traveled over 10,000 miles in 1966 alone. He personally has investigated scores of UFO incidents, and he has interviewed scores of witnesses. Mr. Keel, I would say, at the present time, has done more recently, surely, for the UFO subject than any other writer or lecturer that I know of, and it gives me personally a great deal of pride and satisfaction to bring him now to our microphones, Mr. John Keel.
I'm Toby Ball, and this is Strange Arrivals. Episode 10, Invasion of the Ultra-Terrestrials. The difference between UFO stories that become widely known and those that fall into obscurity is often a product of the telling. Simply put, an exciting story will gain traction and a less exciting one will fade away. The classic example of this is the 1947 Roswell crash, which we covered in Season 2. The incident largely disappeared from the UFO world soon after it happened, only to resurface in 1980 with the publication of Charles Berlitz and William Moore's The Roswell Incident. After that retelling, it became a staple of UFO lore. Behind every famous sighting or encounter, there is a storyteller who made the experience captivating to the public. As we saw with the Mothman encounters and all that went with them, one such storyteller was John Keel.
It's interesting to me because I was attracted to his books and writings from a very early age, and this is when I was first sort of became interested in weird stuff. And like him, I'd read the books of Charles Fort. I was sort of subscribing to Fortean Times and to Flying Saucer Reviews. I'm David Clark. I would describe myself as a folklorist and journalist. I work at Sheffield Hallam University, where I teach in the journalism department. And for a couple of decades, I worked as a news reporter before I got into academia. But I'm also the author of a lot of books and articles on anomalous phenomena, UFOs, cryptozoology, and Fortean subject. The issues of Flying Saucer Review that I was reading had a lot of his articles in there, and What struck me immediately, because I was a budding writer myself and I was trying to break into writing and get things published, I just loved his writing style. I can't put my finger on what it is about his writing style today. I think it's fast-paced, it's energetic, it draws you in. He uses a lot of sort of quoted speech, and I didn't realise it at the time, and now as I teach on the journalism course, I've come to realise that he was writing in what became known as the new journalism style, which was popularised by, I mean, Hunter S. Thompson, Tom Wolfe.
New journalism was a movement that developed in the 1960s and 70s. It featured a literary approach to reporting and centered the journalist as both a character in the story and a subjective narrator.
He sort of crafted his own version of it. Rather than writing in the way that they were, he incorporated all the sort of Fortean weirdness and mixing nonfiction with fiction and with verbatim reportage. And I don't know, a real heady mix that to me as a, I think I must have been 13 or 14 years old when I first read The Mothman Prophecies. Even today, it just blew my mind.
John Keel was born in 1930 in Western New York State. In 1957, he published a memoir titled Jadu. It recounted his travels, mostly in Asia, and his strange experiences.
He'd gone to Egypt, where he'd seen his first flying saucer, I think in 1952, and he'd been to Iraq, where I think he may have even met someone that sounds very much like Saddam Hussein, in the mid-1950s, and he'd travelled into India, into Kashmir, and actually managed to get over the border into Tibet before the Chinese closed it. In his autobiography, Jadu, he talks about being led by these people up into this remote valley where they were hearing these crying noises, and he saw what we would describe as the Yeti or the Abominable Snowman.
This is from Jadu, describing his encounter with the Yeti. It gives you an idea of the sense of adventure that he was able to convey through his writing.
The lamas had given me a bare little monk's cell for the night, and I was sitting there trying to finish up some notes before going to bed. The cry came drifting across the Yuksan Plateau on the low, icy wind sweeping down from the frosty head of Mount Kanchenjunga, only a few miles away. At first, I thought it was just a bird and didn't pay much attention to it. Then a flurry of activity sounded in the dark, smelly corridor, and the old High Lama of Dubti, a wizened, baggy-eyed little man, appeared in my doorway. "You here?" he asked excitedly. "Here? Was just a bird, wasn't it?" "No bird. Shukpa."
Keel and a guide set off to track the Yeti. Shukpa is another name for the same animal. They follow its tracks for days, encountering strange things along the way, including a kind of seance in a Buddhist temple high in the Himalayas. Eventually, he arrives in the village of Lachin, which he says is 8,800 feet above sea level. Children had apparently seen the Yeti just hours before his arrival and take him to the spot, and that is where Keel has his encounter.
Cautiously, I moved forward, staggering up an inclined path strewn with giant boulders. Finally, I emerged onto the edge of a sweeping cavity filled with water, where broken trees and decayed bushes poked up like skeletons. That was where I saw it. Maybe it wasn't a Yeti. I wasn't close enough to be absolutely sure. But something was out there, across the lake. Something big. Breathtakingly big and brown, and moving swiftly, splashing through the shallow, icy waters toward a pile of boulders. As it neared them, another brown blur moved out to meet it, and together they disappeared beyond the debris of a landfall.
Keel also read the works of Charles Fort. Fort wrote a series of books in the early 20th century that defined the realm of the paranormal. He was a collector of facts and stories that he related to show the pervasiveness of things and events that were not explained by current science. Things like spontaneous human combustion, rains of frogs, poltergeists, unexplained disappearances, and, of course, UFOs?
I think the influence from Fort was mostly just this idea that there are a lot of weird things happening. It's not just one thing or another. To my understanding, Fort did not necessarily theorize about what might be causing various things.
Aaron Gullius, host of the Saucer Life podcast.
He was more of a collector of stories and a collator of stories. And Keel takes that idea of looking at a wide array of strange things that's happening and then theorizing about what might be going on. And one phrase from Fort that Keel mentions at least a few times in various writings is this idea that humans on Earth, that we are property, that we belong to somebody. There's something out there that we're not much different from the other animals. We're just part of the collection. So what Keel does is he'll take little phrases like that and sort of spin them into theories. Keel's an interesting guy, and he came up with these various ideas, and you'd never really get a huge impression about what he actually comes down on the side of as far as believing any of this, but there's a lot of wild thought and speculation and things like that in his writing.
I think he was described as the enfant terrible of ufology, you know, terrible French pronunciation. And I think he just enjoyed disrupting the whole scene.
Keel especially liked poking at what are called the nuts and bolts UFO researchers, the ones who wanted to use scientific methods to find evidence and proof of metallic craft flying through our skies.
He described them as serious, in inverted commas, serious ufologists, the type that, I mean, I do this. I'm someone who spends loads of time looking at government documents and things, but I do think there's a group that take themselves very, very seriously. And the whole thing about contactees, for instance, and the more esoteric aspects of ufology, which Keel loved to talk about and to write about, there is a group of people who just want that not to be part of the UFO myth.
In fact, the nuts and bolts people found the contactees and esoteric thinking to be embarrassing and to undermine what they considered the importance of the topic. Here's Aaron Gullius again, talking about Keel. He mentions NICAP and APRO, which were two prominent civilian UFO research organizations that tended towards the nuts and bolts school of ufology.
He was a UFO person, but he was not somebody that would go to NICAP or APRO meetings and sort of get excited about convincing the Air Force to release all of its paperwork. I think it was Keel who had this line in one of his articles where he sort of reversed the way things are normally presented, and he says, the UFO research community is not telling the Air Force what it knows about flying saucers. And basically saying, look, the Air Force probably doesn't know any more than we do, and probably they know less. We just think they have the answer because we think they're physical objects in the air. But if it's stranger than that, then the Air Force isn't going to have a clue one way or the other. So that sort of puts him at odds with the nuts and bolts flying saucer people who dominated the scene in the 1960s and 70s. Where Keel was probably the most popular was with those other flying saucer people that weren't necessarily part of that mainstream.
In an open letter to all UFO researchers, released on January 1st, 1968, Keel blasted the UFO community for not generating any substantial research. He writes about the vast number of appearances of these objects in 1967 and believes it important that a better understanding of their appearance is necessary.
The UFO activity is far greater than the UFO reports. Each report probably represents thousands of non-reported sightings. The sightings are therefore unimportant to the big picture, and their only value is to provide a statistical springboard. It may be that the objects themselves are irrelevant to the basic problems inherent in the phenomenon. If they are merely vehicles of some type, then we must determine the actual purposes of their many landings and covert activities in isolated, thinly populated sections of the world.
Later, he writes,
remember this. Sightings are generally irrelevant, even misleading. Why do you suppose the Air Force spends so little time and effort investigating routine sightings?
So anyone who's trying to find evidence of physical UFOs, you know, nuts and bolts craft, are on a hiding to nothing. They're never going to find them. It's like trying to find the end of a rainbow. You know, you're never going to find that. And I think Keel realized that, and that's why he came up with the concept of ultra-terrestrials.
Rejecting the idea that UFOs were from outer space, Keel put forward a theory involving what he called the super spectrum and ultra-terrestrials. A theory that was expansive and grounded in an eccentric reading of history and, well, unusual. After the break. Strange Arrivals will return in a moment.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
I think if you talk to most people about UFOs, even if they aren't believers or have any interest in the subject, their understanding will be that UFOs come from outer space. This is called the extraterrestrial hypothesis, or ETH. And this is where most researchers start, but some researchers get frustrated by their inability to approach an answer to the phenomenon. This group included J. Allen Hynek, the in-house scientist for Project Blue Book, and the best-known UFO researcher in the 60s and 70s. Again, David Clark.
Well, Hynek, like lots of other people who've gone through that stage, was trying to make the subject scientifically respectable. He was using a lot of scientific language. To use a phrase that Keel used to use, the people just tilting at the same windmills over and over again and reinventing the wheel, and trying to put something into a box and make people take it seriously in a scientific way that it's impossible to categorize in that way, because the UFO is, what is it?
Hynek eventually distanced himself from ETH and became more interested in stranger explanations. John Keel was already there.
And what Keel does is he begins to look at UFOs and other paranormal phenomenon not as necessarily discrete things, but maybe all being various expressions of one phenomenon. And one of the ideas he discusses quite a bit is this almost ultra-dimensional theory of UFOs and other paranormal phenomenon, where perhaps there are entities, objects, things in dimensions that exist above ours, sort of like an overlay to our dimension, that at various times and in various places or to various people, these things break through. And people on our side perceive something that might be completely normal in this other dimension, but for us in our dimension seems amazing or strange or physically impossible.
Keel lays out this theory in his 1975 book, The Eighth Tower.
And he came up with this amazing, as I thought at the time, amazing idea about the superspectrum, that these things were from some sort of higher vibration, and that they came into our world via the sort of the ultraviolet frequencies, and they sort of altered their vibration so that they came into the visible light spectrum. This is set out in his final book, The Eighth Tower, which is just bonkers.
The Eighth Tower is the book that lays out Keel's theory of what he calls the superspectrum and ultra-terrestrials. He talks about both of these ideas in an incredibly broad context, involving the entire world and going back to deep prehistoric times. Trying to summarize the entire book would be impossible, but we can get at some of the basic ideas. First, Keel says that there's a super spectrum of vibrations that we are unable to detect, but which definitely exist. The easiest way to understand this is probably the idea that there are colors that exist, but not within the spectrum visible to humans. Ultraviolet light, for instance, is below the frequency that we can detect. Keel's theory is that there is an entire reality that exists in the same place that we do, but that we can't detect. Paranormal events, he says, are when that reality interacts with ours. He gives an example of a boy who is looking through a microscope at a drop of water. He sees a microbe. The microbe, if it was capable of awareness, would have no idea that the boy even existed. Keel then says that if the boy used the point of a needle to manipulate the microbe would, quote, have no frame of reference for such an object, so it would have to speculate and theorize and invent an explanation. He further says that if you explain to the microbe that a world exists outside of its understanding, it would not believe you and tell you that everyone knows that the universe is made of liquid. He goes on to say,
the plastic masses of energy that form the nucleus of the UFO phenomenon exist outside our time in the same way and, like the boy's needle, only pass through our dimension occasionally.
And later?
The energy field of the superspectrum shares the space of our solar system. Define another one of our physical laws. Two bodies cannot occupy the same space at the same time. Because the energy of the superspectrum is markedly different from the energy of the electromagnetic spectrum, the two can occupy a single space.
As Aaron Gullius said earlier, the superspectrum exists as kind of an overlay over our own reality. And because these occasional breakthroughs from the superspectrum are not really from our reality, the physical laws that we experience don't apply to them. Thus, UFOs can move in ways that seem to defy the laws of physics, and cryptids can just disappear into thin air. Speaking of which, the other part of this theory is the idea of ultra-terrestrials. These are beings from the superspectrum that occasionally end up in our reality. Keel puts this in a historical context of priests of ancient civilizations communing with gods. He theorizes that these priests are people with enhanced psychic abilities that allow them to more easily perceive the superspectrum. Are you still with me? Keel writes,
the religious orders conjure angels, even great luminous blobs purporting to be God himself. The magical crafts call up demons and great spirits. The spiritualists summon the shades of the dear departed.
He says that these rites can summon ultra-terrestrials from the superspectrum. And when the ultra-terrestrials interact with humans, their substance changes from pure energy to atomic reality, and they are now in our physical world. Keel says that they are adrift, without a mind of their own.
Some of these transmogrifications attain a degree of independence once they have been created, but they are mindless and lost. They wander around our dimension as ghosts and goblins, harmless until they find a believer. Then they feed off the mind and emotions of that believer, assuming the identity subconsciously chosen by the believer, and creating manifestations within the context of the belief or frame of reference.
I think I know what he means, in that there is no external agency that's creating this, and that we are the phenomenon. That's how he phrased it. And I think it means that all the stories, all the experiences are all things that are happening to us that appear to be external. There's an external source, but they're actually generated by us. It's almost like a dream that we're living.
This theory explains why paranormal experiences change over the centuries. From fairies and werewolves to the Yeti and aliens, or angels to giant airships to UFOs. While the ultra-terrestrials are separate from us, our minds give them their form, and so the paranormal phenomena comes in large part from inside us. This was, broadly speaking, fairly close to theories put forward by, most notably, prominent UFO researcher Jacques Vallée, who laid out a similar vision in his 1969 book, Passport to Magonia. But Kiel had been working on this for years and claimed that he was the originator of these ideas. This is from a letter to the editor that appeared in Gray Barker's newsletter in March 1976. Kiel begins by referencing a drawing of him that appeared on the cover of a previous edition.
Dear Gray, my usual fee for allowing my handsome countenance to be used on the cover of scurrilous publications is $5,000. However, in this case, you will be an exception. I have instructed my lawyer to sue you for everything you've got.
He then claims that Alan Hynek's, and especially Jacques Vallée's, recent works were essentially restating things that he had theorized and written about in the 1960s, and which those two men had criticized at the time. He refers to Vallée's 1975 book, The Invisible College, as part Vallée, part Kiel, and part bullshit. Then he writes,
"The simple truth is this. There is nothing whatsoever to the UFO phenomenon. There is nothing to be gained by a scientific study of the matter. The ETH is nothing but a trick, a propaganda device that has been foisted upon us. Historically, the overall phenomenon has done considerable damage to the human race and is responsible for the deaths of millions of people. It is human to indulge in wishful thinking and hope that it is leading us somewhere, but it has always led us down dead ends to destruction, and I don't think that situation is suddenly going to change."
Barker replied that he was glad Kiel was suing him for everything he had because his net worth was about minus 37 cents, and Kiel would end up owing him money, but that he'd settle for a beer. Clearly a couple of jokers. You might have noticed that Kiel claimed that the phenomenon is responsible for millions of deaths. He doesn't explain that statement, but in The Eighth Tower, he ties the phenomenon to all sorts of historical events, including the Black Plague, which did kill millions in Europe during the Middle Ages. So I think that's what he means. So how should we take all of this? Kiel was such a character, it's not clear how serious or exacting he was compared with, say, Alan Hynek.
To paraphrase The X-Files, I definitely think he wanted to believe. It was difficult to divine what he actually believed from his writings, because there's a lot of contradictory material in there, and there's no doubt that even in his reportage of events that we know took place, you know, like with the Mothman sightings in West Virginia, I mean, there's no doubt about it that a lot of his descriptions of that, although it's factual, it's exaggerated. It's done for effect the way he's presented it. You do wonder, did those events really happen in the way that he described them? And I think some of them didn't. And I think he knew they didn't happen in that way, but because he needed to write a good story, he cunningly sort of combined real happenings with fictional happenings.
And this might be a product of Keel's self-image, because unlike Hynek or John Mack or Cynthia Hind, he didn't see himself first and foremost as a researcher.
They actually asked him that question, and they said, what would you like to be remembered as? And rather than being, you know, remembered as a ufologist or, a New Agey person or the author of the Mothman Prophecies, he just wanted to be remembered as an effective writer.
And being an effective writer, in his case at least, meant that he didn't necessarily intend for every word he wrote to be taken literally.
I thought he believed all this. I thought he was convinced that these ultra-terrestrials were real. The big sort of thing, the blow, as it was at the time when I met him and we had this long discussion, was he just told me that he'd invented the whole thing. You know, it was a literary device.
Now, many years later, the folklorist in Clark isn't so much concerned with the truth of the story as in the story itself and the storyteller.
I'm attracted to Keel's writings because he was a storyteller, a very effective storyteller, and his writings will live on long after a lot of these serious ufologists have been long forgotten.
If he seems to be talking about these ideas in the present tense, it's because the ideas are still around today, and they're influencing some of the highest profile UFO research being conducted right now. Next time on Strange Arrivals.
Strange Arrivals is a production of iHeartRadio and Grim and Mild from Aaron Mankey. This episode was written and hosted by Toby Ball and produced by Rima El-Khayali, Jesse Funk, and Noemi Griffin, with executive producers Alexander Williams, Matt Frederick, and Aaron Mankey, and supervising producer Josh Thane,
with voice acting by Ben Bolin.
Learn more about the show at grimandmild.com/strangearrivals. And find more podcasts from iHeartRadio by visiting the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com, that's RiteRug.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.